A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants a proper background briefing on Ahmad Vahidi, the guy who keeps getting called the man in the shadows in Iran. Walk through his biography, his IRGC and Quds Force career, his role in the 1994 AMIMI bombing in Buenos Aires, the Interpol Red Notice, his time as Defense Minister and Interior Minister, and what his current standing tells us about who actually pulls the levers in Tehran. And he's asking how influential Vahidi really is, and why his name keeps popping up in succession chatter.
This is one of those figures where the more you dig, the more you realize how much of the Western conversation about Iran completely misses the actual power structure. Vahidi is not a household name, but he might be one of the five most important people in the Islamic Republic right now.
By the way, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today, so if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
I'll take that as a compliment to the model and an insult to me, and I'm fine with both. So let's start with the basics. Ahmad Vahidi was born in 1958 in Kerman Province, southeastern Iran. He's a career military man, but not in the regular army. He's IRGC from day one, essentially. Joined the Revolutionary Guard shortly after the 1979 revolution, served in the Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s, and then rose through the ranks in a way that tells you a lot about how the regime actually works.
What's the specific trajectory? Because rose through the ranks could mean a dozen different things in a parallel military structure like the IRGC.
So his early career is in intelligence and operations. He's not a battlefield commander who made his name leading brigades. He goes into the Quds Force, which is the external operations arm of the IRGC, the unit responsible for running proxy networks, terrorist operations, covert action abroad. And this is where the story gets very dark very fast.
The AMIA bombing.
The AMIA bombing. July 18, 1994. A suicide bomber drives a Renault traffic van loaded with explosives into the Asociación Mutual Israelita Argentina, the Jewish community center in Buenos Aires. 85 people killed, over 300 wounded. Still, the deadliest terrorist attack in Argentine history. And the investigation, which took years and faced enormous political interference in Argentina, ultimately pointed directly at Iran and Hezbollah.
Vahidi's specific role.
In 2006, Argentine prosecutors formally accused Ahmad Vahidi of being one of the masterminds. At the time of the bombing, he was the head of the Quds Force. The evidence gathered, and this is from the Argentine judiciary, not from Mossad or the CII. A. This is a sovereign country's court system, indicated that the attack was planned at the highest levels of the Iranian government, with operational support from Hezbollah, and that Vahidi was central to the decision-making. In 2007, Interpol issued a red notice for his arrest, along with several other senior Iranian officials, including former President Hashemi Rafsanjani and former Foreign Minister Ali Akbar Velayati.
A red notice is essentially an international wanted poster. It's not an arrest warrant, but it's Interpol telling member countries, "We believe this person should be provisionally arrested pending extradition." So what happened?
That's what happened. Vahidi was never arrested, never faced justice, and not only that, he went on to hold some of the most senior positions in the Iranian government. In 2009, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad appointed him as Minister of Defense. Let that sink in. A man wanted by Interpol for allegedly planning the mass murder of civilians becomes the public face of Iraq's defense establishment. He served in that role until 2013, then resurfaced as Interior Minister under Ibrahim Razi from 2021 to 2024.
The international community's response to a red notice suspect becoming defense minister was
condemnation, statements, diplomatic notes. Argentina formally protested. And this tells you something fundamental about how the Islamic Republic operates. It doesn't just tolerate officials with terrorist backgrounds, it promotes them. It's a feature, not a bug. having blood on your hands, being implicated in operations against Israeli or Jewish targets abroad, that's a credential in this system. It demonstrates loyalty and ideological commitment.
It makes you impossible to rehabilitate in the West, which means you're locked into the regime permanently. No exit option.
That's the strategic logic. Once you're on an Interpol red notice for terrorism, you can't exactly retire to Geneva and write a memoir. Your fate is completely tied to the survival of the regime. That makes you very trustworthy from the Supreme Leader's perspective.
Let's talk about what's happened recently, because Daniel's question isn't just historical curiosity. He's asking why Vahidi's name is suddenly everywhere in succession chatter.
So here's the big development. In March of this year, 2 months ago, Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei appointed Ahmad Vahidi as the Commander-in-Chief of the entire Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. This is not a ceremonial position. The IRGC commander controls a parallel military structure that is larger, better funded, and more politically powerful than Iran's regular armed forces. The IRGC runs the ballistic missile program, the nuclear program's military dimensions, the proxy network across the Middle East. Hezbollah, the Houthis, Iraqi militias, Syrian forces, and it controls a massive chunk of the Iranian economy through its engineering and construction conglomerates.
The previous IRGC commander was Hussein Salami, who'd held the post since 2019. What happened to him?
Salami was moved to head the Expediency Discernment Council's Security Committee, which sounds important, but in practice is a step away from direct operational control. The read I've seen from analysts, and there was a good piece in Al Monitor on this last month, is that Khamenei wanted a harder line, someone more ideologically rigid and less willing to even entertain the idea of nuclear compromise. Vahidi fits that profile perfectly.
The Al Monitor piece called him a hardliner against nuclear compromise. What does that mean in concrete terms?
It means Vahidi has consistently opposed the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, and any diplomatic engagement with the West on the nuclear file. His view, and he's been public about this, is that negotiations are a trap, that the United States can never be trusted, and that Iran's security depends on achieving nuclear breakout capability without constraints. He's from the school that believes the only thing that kept Gaddafi's Libya and Saddam's Iraq from being invaded was the absence of a nuclear deterrent, and that North Korea's survival proves the point.
You've got a guy who is wanted by Interpol, who's on record opposing any diplomatic track, now commanding the military force that controls the nuclear program and the proxy network. And this is happening while Trump is reviewing some kind of peace proposal on Iran, while we're 65 days into a conflict that's still unfolding.
That's why his name is surfacing in succession chatter. Khamenei is 87 years old. He's been in power since 1989. The question of who succeeds him is the single most important variable in Iranian politics, and it's been an open question for years. The formal process is that the Assembly of Experts, a body of 88 clerics, selects the next supreme leader. But in practice, the IRGC has enormous influence over that process. Whoever commands the IRGC when Khamenei dies is going to have a decisive say in who becomes the next supreme leader, or might even become a candidate themselves.
There was a piece in the Economic Times of India recently that framed Vahidi as the man reportedly calling the shots in Iran and worrying Trump's team. What's the basis for that?
The argument is that Vahidi's appointment to IRGC commander represents Khamenei consolidating power around a trusted inner circle as the succession approaches. Vahidi is not just an IRGC figure, he's also deeply connected to the clerical establishment. He studied at the Qom Seminary, he has religious credentials that matter in a system where legitimacy still flows from the concept of velayat-e faqih, the guardianship of the jurist. That combination, IRGC hard power plus clerical legitimacy, makes him uniquely positioned.
How influential is he, really? Is this a case of Western analysts over-indexing on the guy whose name they just learned? Or is there something structural here?
I think it's structural, and I'll tell you why. The IRGC has been steadily accumulating power for 2 decades. Under Ahmadinejad, IRGC veterans flooded into civilian government positions. Under Khamenei's direct encouragement, the IRGC's economic wing, Qatam al-Anbiya, its construction and engineering conglomerate, has taken over huge swaths of the Iranian economy, especially in energy, infrastructure, and telecommunications. The IRGC runs the ports, the missile program, the nuclear facilities, the proxy militias, and a big slice of the black market economy that keeps the regime afloat under sanctions.
You're saying the IRGC commander is already more powerful than the president, and arguably more powerful than anyone except the supreme leader himself.
That's exactly what I'm saying. The Iranian president, currently Masoud Pezeshkian, controls very little. He doesn't control the military, he doesn't control the nuclear program, he doesn't control foreign policy on the issues that matter most. Those are all under the Supreme Leader's Office and the IRGC. The president manages the economy, or tries to, and represents Iran diplomatically on secondary issues. But when it comes to war and peace, nuclear decisions, and the survival of the regime, the IRGC commander is in the room and the president is often not.
Vahidi's current standing tells us that Khamenei is putting his most trusted hardliner in charge of the institution that will determine the succession. That's the signal.
And there's another layer here. Vahidi's appointment also sends a message about the current war. We're 65 days into a U.S.-Israel conflict with Iran. The details of what's happening on the ground are murky. There's a lot of contradictory reporting. But what we know is that Trump is reviewing some kind of peace proposal, and that there are factions within the Iranian regime that might be open to a negotiated settlement.
Vahidi is the signal that the hardliners are in control of that decision.
You don't put Ahmad Vahidi in charge of the IRGC if you're planning to make concessions. You put him there because you want to signal resolve, because you want the military apparatus locked down under someone whose entire career says, "I will never compromise with the West." And because you want to make sure that if there is a ceasefire or a deal, it's on terms the hardliners can live with.
Let's go back to the AMIA bombing for a minute, because I think it's worth understanding what the Argentine investigation actually found, and why it matters for assessing Vahidi's role.
Yeah, walk through it.
The investigation was led by a special prosecutor named Alberto Niesman. He spent a decade building the case. In 2006, he formally accused the Iranian government of directing the attack and Hezbollah of carrying it out. The evidence included intercepted phone calls, testimony from Iranian defectors, and a paper trail showing that the decision was made at a meeting of the Supreme National Security Council in August 1993, almost a year before the bombing.
Vahidi was at that meeting?
According to Niesman's indictment, yes. Vahidi, as Quds Force commander, was one of the key participants. The operational details were then handed off to Hezbollah's external operations wing, specifically to a man named Imad Mukhniyeh, who was Hezbollah's military commander until he was killed in Damascus in 2008. The actual bomber was a Lebanese Hezbollah operative who entered Argentina on a false passport.
Niesman himself, his story doesn't end well.
No, it doesn't. In January 2015, Niesman was found dead in his apartment in Buenos Aires, shot in the head, the day before he was scheduled to testify before the Argentine Congress about his allegations that then-President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner had secretly negotiated a deal with Iran to cover up Iranian involvement in the bombing in exchange for trade benefits. His death was ruled a suicide by the initial investigation, but that finding has been widely disputed. A later inquiry concluded it was likely a homicide.
You have a prosecutor building a case against Vahidi and other senior Iranians, and he ends up dead the day before he's supposed to present evidence of a cover-up at the highest levels of Argentine politics. And Vahidi goes on to become defense minister and then IRGC commander.
The impunity is the point. The regime is sending a message to its own people and to the world. Our enemies can't touch us. We can plan the bombing of a Jewish community center on the other side of the world. We can be indicted by an international arrest warrant, and we will still hold the highest offices in the land and command the most powerful military force in the region.
There's one more detail on the AMIA case that's worth mentioning. In 2024, an Argentine court actually ruled that Iran was responsible for the AMIA bombing and declared it a crime against humanity. That ruling came after years of legal battles and political obstruction. Vahidi was specifically named in the court's findings. So this isn't just a prosecutor's accusation anymore, it's a judicial finding by a sovereign court.
Which Iran ignores, of course.
And the international community does nothing. That's the pattern.
Let me ask you something. When you look at the Western coverage of Iran, there's a tendency to focus on the reformist versus hardliner dynamic, as if there's a real political contest happening. Does Vahidi's career arc tell us that framework is basically wrong?
I think it tells us the framework is inadequate. The reformists have never controlled the institutions that actually matter. They win the presidency sometimes, Khatami, Rouhani, now Pezeshkian. But they don't control the IRGC, they don't control the judiciary, they don't control the Supreme Leader's Office, they don't control the Guardian Council that vets candidates. They can moderate the tone, they can negotiate on secondary issues, they can try to attract foreign investment. But on the core questions of the regime, the nuclear program, support for proxy militias, hostility to Israel, the role of the IRGC in the economy, the hardliners have always held the veto.
Vahidi is the embodiment of that veto.
He's the embodiment of that veto with a very specific twist, which is that he's not just an IRGC hardliner, he's an IRGC hardliner with deep clerical connections and a long history in both the military and intelligence apparatus. He's crossed between the Quds Force, the Defense Ministry, the Interior Ministry, and now the IRGC Command. That kind of cross-institutional career is unusual. Most IRGC commanders stay in the military track. Vahidi has moved between military, intelligence, and civilian government roles in a way that suggests the Supreme Leader sees him as a general-purpose instrument of regime control.
What's the succession scenario that people are actually worried about?
There are a few possibilities. One is that Khamenei dies and the Assembly of Experts selects a relatively pliable cleric as the next Supreme Leader. Someone who will be a figurehead while the IRGC runs the country from behind the scenes. In that scenario, Vahidi as IRGC commander is effectively the most powerful person in Iran, even if he's not the supreme leader on paper.
The man in the shadows.
The second scenario is that the IRGC pushes for a supreme leader who is himself from the IRGC orbit, someone who merges military and clerical authority. That would be a major break from precedent. The Supreme Leader has always been a senior cleric from the seminary establishment, not a military figure, but the IRGC has been steadily eroding that distinction for years. Vahidi's seminary background makes him a potential bridge figure.
The third scenario.
The third scenario is that there's no clean succession at all. Khamenei dies, factions within the regime compete for power, the IRGC splits or faces internal challenges, and the whole system goes through a period of instability. In that scenario, Vahidi's control over the IRGC could be either the stabilizing force or the source of the conflict, depending on how the internal dynamics play out.
What do we know about factional dynamics within the IRGC itself? Is it a monolith?
It's not a monolith, and that's an important caveat. There are generational divisions, the old guard that fought in the Iran-Iraq war versus younger officers who came up through the Syria and Yemen deployments. There are economic divisions, factions tied to different business interests within the IRGC's sprawling commercial empire. And there are ideological divisions. Some IRGC figures are more pragmatic about economic engagement with the outside world, while others are committed to a fortress. Iran approach. Vahidi is firmly in the fortress, Iran camp.
Which means his appointment might also be about suppressing internal dissent within the IRGC itself.
That's a very good point. Khamenei might be less worried about the reformists. They're neutered and more worried about factional splits within the security establishment. Putting a known hardliner with deep personal loyalty at the top of the IRGC is a way of saying no freelancing.
Let me ask about the operational side. The Quds Force, which Vahidi once commanded, has taken some serious hits in recent years. Qasem Soleimani was killed in 2020. His successor, Esmail Khani, has been much lower profile and by some accounts less effective. The proxy network has been under enormous pressure. Hezbollah degraded, Hamas decimated, the Houthis facing sustained strikes. What does Vahidi's appointment mean for the operational posture?
It probably means a more aggressive rebuilding effort. Vahidi is not a diplomat. He's an operator who came up through the external operations wing. His instinct when the proxy network is degraded is going to be to rebuild it, not to shift to a different strategy. He's also likely to push for accelerated nuclear progress as a deterrent, precisely because the conventional proxy deterrent has been weakened.
Which brings us back to the current war. If you're sitting in the White House reviewing a peace proposal and you see Khamenei appoint Ahmad Vahidi as IRGC commander, what signal are you receiving?
You're receiving a signal that the Iranian regime is preparing for a long confrontation, not a negotiated settlement. You're receiving a signal that the people in charge in Tehran believe they can outlast Western pressure, that the nuclear program is their ultimate insurance policy, and that any deal that constrains their military capabilities is a non-starter.
Is that a genuine signal, or is it posturing for domestic consumption and negotiating leverage?
It's both, and that's what makes it hard to read. The Iranian regime is very good at running parallel tracks, negotiating in Geneva while arming proxies in Beirut, signing nuclear agreements while building covert facilities. Vahidi's appointment could be a genuine hardening, or it could be a way of consolidating the hardliner base, so that if Khamenei does decide to make a deal, he can sell it internally as a tactical retreat rather than a strategic surrender.
The only Nixon could go to China logic.
If the hardest of hardliners signs off on a deal, it's harder for anyone to attack it as a sellout. There's a scenario where Vahidi's appointment actually creates the political conditions for a negotiated settlement, because he's the guy who can credibly say, I would never compromise Iran's security, and if I'm accepting this deal, it must be acceptable.
I'm skeptical of that interpretation, but I see the logic. How likely do you think it is?
Honestly, I think it's unlikely. The weight of the evidence points toward a genuine hardening. Vahidi's entire career says he doesn't do compromise. The regime is under military pressure, its proxies are degraded, its economy is in terrible shape, and the succession is looming. In that environment, the instinct of a figure like Vahidi is going to be to double down, not to pivot.
One more question about the domestic dimension. Vahidi served as interior minister from 2021 to 2024. That's the ministry that controls the police, domestic security, and, crucially, the suppression of protests. What was his record there?
The 2022 Mahsa Amini protests, the Woman, Life, Freedom movement, happened on his watch as interior minister. The regime's response was mass arrests, torture, and executions. The crackdown was one of the bloodiest episodes of domestic repression in the Islamic Republic's history. Vahidi was directly responsible for coordinating the security forces' response. He oversaw the internet shutdowns, the deployment of the morality police, the mass trials. If anyone in the West had any doubt about who Ahmad Vahidi is, his tenure at the Interior Ministry should have erased it.
The arc is, Quds Force Commander implicated in the deadliest terrorist attack in Argentine history. Defense Minister. Interior Minister overseeing the brutal crackdown on the Mahsa Amini protests. And now IRGC Commander-in-Chief. That's a career that tells you exactly what the Islamic Republic values.
It tells you what the succession is going to be about. This is a regime that is preparing for a future in which there is no reconciliation with the West, no normalization, no moderation. The people being elevated are the ones who have made themselves permanently irreconcilable with the international order. They're not hedging their bets. They're all in.
When Daniel asks how influential Vahidi really is, the answer is he might be the second most powerful person in Iran right now, and depending on how the succession plays out, he might become the most powerful.
I put it this way. If Khamenei died tomorrow, the person who controls the IRGC is the person who controls Iran. Right now, that person is Ahmad Vahidi. That makes him, at minimum, the most important person in the room that Western policymakers need to understand, but mostly don't.
The reason most people don't know his name?
Because the Western media and policy establishment spent 30 years obsessing over the Iranian presidency as if it mattered, while the real power was being consolidated in institutions most Americans couldn't name. The Quds Force, the Office of the Supreme Leader. The Guardian Council. Vahidi's career is a masterclass in how to accumulate power in a system designed to be opaque to outsiders. And now he's at the top of the pyramid.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
The surface area of the average adult human lung is roughly the size of a tennis court.
Right. I'm going to think about that for the rest of the day.
The question I keep coming back to is whether Vahidi's elevation is a sign of strength or weakness. You could read it either way. The regime is so confident it's promoting its hardest hardliners, or the regime is so threatened it's circling the wagons around the most ruthless people it has.
I think it's both, and that's not a cop-out. Regimes under pressure do both things at once. They project strength externally while feeling existential threat internally. Vahidi's appointment is a signal of resolve to the outside world and a signal of internal consolidation to the regime's own ranks. The real test is what happens when Khamenei is no longer there to manage the balance between factions. That's when we find out whether the system is more resilient than it looks.
That's the forward-looking question worth keeping an eye on. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find every episode at My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.